A little knowledge can be a dangerous thing. At least that's one of the lessons in Garson Kanin's classic comedy Born Yesterday, when a former chorus girl starts to learn about the ideals of democracy from a handsome journalist turned tutor, just as her junkyard mogul boyfriend is in the process of buying a senator. The play is being revived on Broadway at the Court Theater through July 31st, and joining me now are two of its stars, Nina Arianda and Robert Sean Leonard. I'm very pleased to welcome them both back to our show today. Hello.
Hello. It's great to be here.
Thanks for having me.
This play was originally produced on Broadway in 1946, and it was a hit with more than 1,000 performances before it closed, and then made into a classic film in 1950. Are you hoping for 1,000 performances again?
I don't think I could be around Nina Arianda that long. I think I'd lose my mind.
You're nodding your head, Nina. What does he mean?
Oh, she knows.
Well, I know what he means, but I'm gonna say
that. Pass.
I would do 1,000 with Robert Sean Leonard. I'm sorry, he doesn't feel the same way about me.
I would love the show to run that long. I'm always surprised when anything like this gets done on Broadway. I'm thrilled that it does, and I'm thrilled people come to see it and love it. I mean, there are old plays that I adore, and it's just a miracle to me.
I wonder if James Belushi would want to do it. He writes at the end of his bio in the playbill, he resides in Los Angeles with his young family. He misses them dearly, but his German Shepherd Cash is the one waiting by the door for him to return.
I look forward to meeting Cash. He's the one member of the family I haven't met yet.
Had you seen the film starring Judy Holliday and William Holden?
Yes,
Roderick Crawford?
Many times. I don't think Nina's even seen it.
I haven't seen it yet. No, I'm going to wait until the end of the run.
Were you afraid that you'd be affected by Judy Holliday's performance, which is magnificent?
I think so, yeah, because the word iconic is pretty scary for me, and I kind of decided that if I'm going to do this, then I'll go down with my own decisions, I think, you know.
Well, Robert, there's a lot of wit in Garson Kanin's play. Did they change much of the script when they adapted it for the screen?
Oh, they didn't change much. They omitted a lot. It's the film. I'm not a fan of the film. I think Judy Holliday is remarkable in it. I think William Holden is just a walking icon. He's just
and a talking one too.
Yeah, that guy just walks down the street and flowers bloom. He's one of those people fall on the pavement and wave multicolored flags, as my dad would say. As you can imagine, I had no trouble stepping in those shoes. But I think the film is rather tame and a bit dull. I think Roderick Crawford's over the top. I mean, he always spoke very highly of my work, and they omitted a lot of the sexuality. There's a lot of heat in this play, and a lot of blood, and sex, and
that was Hollywood at the time.
Yeah, they had to. And the film, I think, is quite tame and nowhere near as interesting and entertaining as the play.
Well, Nina, this is your Broadway debut, and you've been nominated for a Tony, so congratulations.
Thank you.
Did you have specific inspirations for your portrayal of Billy Dawn?
I don't know. I surrounded myself with certain things that I think possibly inspired me. I wouldn't say directly with the character, but I listened to a lot of Dolly Parton and Cyndi Lauper.
And I still listen to them quite a bit, I can tell you, from having a dressing room down the hall.
Yeah, Mule Skinner.
The Mule Skinner.
Is Robert's favorite song that I play in the dressing room.
That's a tough one.
but I kind of surrounded myself with their music, and I have a lot of admiration for them, just as women, as artists. And
although even Cyndi Lauper's Brooklyn accent is not as pronounced as Billy Dawn's, because it was a different time. And a Brooklyn accent was much stronger in those days.
Right.
Especially at the beginning of the play, Billy Dawn is a very familiar character. Is there a danger of making the whole play into one long dumb blonde joke, or does the script steer you away from that?
I think the script steers me away, and I think that with each question that she's asked, I think that she grows in a different direction.
Although I don't actually remember her saying she wasn't born yesterday.
No, thank
so
God.
So she doesn't say it, but I guess the title tells us that she's thinking that.
There's a progression in the script that I've always loved. That's not, I'm lying. I've loved it since I sort of found it in rehearsal by watching them. But where the character is with the senator, has come to visit, the big senator, and she says, they mention the Supreme Court, and she says, what is it? Mm-hmm. And it gets a big laugh. And there's a line later where one of the men says the hell of her stupidity is she doesn't realize that she doesn't fit. And then later my character says, listen, I'll show you around Washington. And the first thing she says is, do you know this Supreme Court? I want to take that in. And which shows me that he's wrong. She does know it, which is, to me, the key to why the character is so fun to watch. She knows exactly when she's not fitting in and does note it and does want to change and grow. And
well, at the beginning, she says she doesn't need to know anything because if she wants something, she just asks for it. She has two mink coats.
Right, but I don't think she knows what to ask for. And mm-hmm. I think that's kind of...
Later she discovers there are things she wants to know.
Right.
Your character, Paul Varel, is a reporter who seems to be both idealistic and practical. He believes in the ideals of government but recognizes that almost everyone falls short of them. He's almost more weary than anything else.
Yeah, I would say over anything else that he's tired. And when he's called back, Billy Dawn's boyfriend calls him back for an interview and asks if he will spend time with her and put her wise to a few things, as he says. I think he takes it on because he's lonely, he's bored, and he's disappointed.
But he also seems to be one of the few people, at least at the start, who realizes that there's more to Billy than meets the eye.
Yeah. Well, most idealists I know are bored, lonely, and disappointed, to be honest. So, I mean, I don't think he's not idealistic. And I think he, when he meets her, well, he's attracted to her immediately, physically, and then he enjoys being with her. And then...
And she's different from all the other people in Washington.
Oh, yes, from what I would imagine, yeah.
Do you think that he'd be considered a liberal reporter today by the folks at Fox News?
Hmm. At this point in politics, he'd pretty much be a socialist. Yeah.
Jim Belushi plays Harry Brock, a man who owns over 100 junkyards around the country. And what is he doing in Washington?
You're his girlfriend. Don't look at me.
He's trying to get Washington in his back pocket. He's trying to, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's a bully. And I'd imagine that character is fun to play off of for both of you.
Yeah, yeah. It's it's always great to be the guy who's got nothing to lose. He's as Christofferson said, that is freedom. And so when he walks in, he's just free. And then Harry says, you know, you play your cards right, I'll put you on the payroll. And he just laughs and says, sure, sure. He doesn't want a thing, which is a lovely position to be in. And when you don't want anything and you're with someone who depends on people wanting things, it's a fun time. That's how I'm sure Nina's character experiences things differently.
Well, you have to put up with his bullying.
Yeah, but she's decided to put up with that. That's what the remarkable thing is about Billy to me, is that she has decided to make certain things more important than other things, and she kind of goes along with it, and she accepts being treated that way because of minks and because of material things that she puts value on.
Now, it's just a coincidence that you're here on the same day that we had Mamie Gummer and Hamish Linklater, who are appearing in a David Ives play, but you appeared in Venus and Fur last season.
Yeah.
And both of these characters, Billy and Vonda, go through all sorts of transitions over the course of a play.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I think they're both, I mean, Vonda, obviously, but Billy is also an incredibly layered character. And those are the best characters to play.
Especially somebody who's constantly confounding us. We expect them to be going in one direction and then
absolutely.
They do something else.
I think
else.
The biggest difference is that there is, in my opinion, no subtext with Billy. Mm-hmm. And I think quite a bit, whether we know it or not, with Vonda. So that's the difference for me.
Helping Harry get his legislation through Congress is his hard-drinking lawyer, Ed Devery, played by wonderfully... In fact, the cast is just fabulous.
I think so, too.
Frank Wood, And there's a senator played by Terry Beaver, and his wife is the senator's wife, is played by Patricia Hodges, mm-hmm. and one of the most marvelous comic turns you could ever imagine. She could get a laugh out of a hat.
She knows what she's doing. She's very, very funny. We're very blessed. And Michael McGraw plays Eddie, who's his sort of henchman, his sure boss guy, and he's. That guy could be the lead. I mean, he's one of Broadway's great comic physical actors, and to have him in this role is a real blessing.
Does your character Paul, along with the senator and Ed the lawyer, understand the game that Harry's playing better than Harry does?
Sure. I think Paul understands how things work with a bit more of an eagle eye view than Harry does. Maybe not as well as Ed Devery does, but Ed and I feel there's a kinship that's grown with the character of Ed for me throughout the run. It's getting more and more pronounced. It's the minute he walks in and sees him, I think he feels a great sadness for this guy who he used to look up to and is now. At the whim of this bully, this rich bully.
And I think they understand also the seriousness of the consequences. Well, I don't think Brock does as much.
But you said that as the run continues, the people understand it more and more. Your character, Sue, how long into the run of a play do you need to go before you really know who you're playing?
I hope with each play I learn something, with each show that I learn something new. I think it's no fun if you know something.
Because
completely.
Then you're just repeating yourself every night. There are actors like Laurence Olivier who said you get the role down and you do that every night, and that's what acting's all about. And then there are other actors who feel that every night you respond to what the other character said in a way that seems appropriate at that moment.
To me, there's no option but the second version in a way. I think you're dealing with not only a character but an individual, and that is not you. And so you have, in a way, a whole lifetime to figure out everything about them, and that's endless, really. Mm-hmm. So it's so fun every night to discover a new whatever it is, a new way of looking at something.
Have until July 31st to understand Billy Dawn completely.
I can't wait.
some of the references in the play may seem a bit dated, but the idea that money can buy power in politics is just as relevant today as it was in 1950. And were you surprised by just how contemporary some of these things sounded 65 years later?
I was not.
Because there were some bitter laughs from segments of the audience at some of the references when I saw the show.
Sure. Money is pieces of paper with ink on them. It's not – all it is power. It just means power. It's when you have something other people want and it's in your power to dole it out to them. That's all money is. And in any country, no matter what the money's called, that's what it is. So the fact that people – find it surprising when money, waltzes with power, I've always found odd because it seems like a given to me.
Well, Harry is very free with his generosity when he wants to buy somebody. When he offers people $100,000 and you realize this play was 1946.
Yeah.
That had to have been I'll give you a couple of million dollars.
Right.
Yeah. When he says to me at the end, he wants me to finally give in, and he says, how does $100,000 sound or something? And today's that would be about a million or maybe even more.
Now, audiences at that time must have really gasped at the fact that we won't tell what your character
turned the
money down, although I think we could probably figure that out.
And that's true. In the hotel room in the very beginning, I say it's $235 a day, which would be about, $1,500 a day or something. Which actually isn't
more than that.
I guess it
would be. A couple thousand.
Yeah, which actually isn't that rare.
Well, people were shocked by how much DSK was paying for that hotel. You can pay $5,000-$6,000 a night nowadays.
Yeah, exactly.
There are a lot of props that are written into the play, cards, books, dictionaries, and you get a lot of laughs out of them. did you sort of discover the humor in them throughout the rehearsal process?
Absolutely. Yeah, in the gin game, which that's my favorite scene in the play. And I love that
hilarious.
There's no dialogue in it at all. Yeah, through the rehearsal and through playing with Jim and having a nice back and forth with that, it's great.
One of the things that you have to do in a comedy is get the audience with you right from the start. Are there any tricks? Once you start laughing, then they're going
to
laugh.
You have to be good. One thing Doug Hughes, our director, was always clear about with me was that I start the play with a woman named Jen Reagan, who plays Helen, the chambermaid, and I basically come in and say, you know, who's coming in here? Is his name Harry Brock? And it's about a 2-page scene, and it starts the play. And Doug always made it very clear that it's got to be a strong start. I had one at very, very first time I read the script, there's a moment where she says, hey, look, I'm not the room clerk, when I ask who's staying in here. And I have my responses, I'm supposed to meet this guy, that's all. I just wondered if maybe he was coming in here. And I was doing a Jimmy Stewart on it, and I thought, it would be funny if I kind of roll back on that, sort of like, well, I'll just wonder if he's coming in here. And kind of be endearing to her in that way. And Doug said, that's a really terrible choice. That's not working at all. You've got to be on – every line you have in the scene has to be a step forward, because the audience is settling in, and they want to know they're in good, strong hands, and they don't want any wishy-washy stuff going on. So you've got to be strong. You've got to be good. That's true of any play. The curtain, the first 2 pages are very, very crucial.
And you've appeared in several Thomas Depard plays throughout your career. They can be funny, but they're not comedies.
It's hard to label, you know, plays sometimes. Tom is extremely – he's, I think, the greatest living playwright we have. I've been very lucky. Arcadia, Invention of Love, and Jumpers, and The Real Thing, and he's just the greatest.
Most people will, or many of our listeners anyway, will know you for your role as Dr. James Wilson in the Fox show House.
Mm-hmm.
Just had its season finale last night. Were you shooting House when rehearsals began?
Yes. I was commuting for about 6 hellish weeks. I would rehearse and then fly to L.A. on Sunday night and then shoot Monday and then fly back for rehearsal on Tuesday.
Is that why it's been 7.5 years since you've been on Broadway?
We didn't have a very long hiatus. We would shoot House. Generally, we've got about a 6-week break between wrapping and starting the next season. So there's just not enough time to do a play. But this year, I had a bigger window.
And Nina, as I said earlier, you got incredible reviews for your role as Vonda in the David Ives play Venus in Furs last season at the Classic Stage Company. I'm assuming that's going to be, in every bio, your breakthrough. But you're very, very busy. I just saw you in Midnight in Paris, Woody Allen's film.
I have yet to see it.
There's
I'm very
also
excited.
Tom McCarthy's Win-Win,
mm-hmm.
and 4 or 5 others. How many films have you been in this year?
Four, yeah.
If you want to get any roles in radio, you have to learn not to hit the microphone.
Yes. Right on. Lesson learned.
This has been a busy year for you. Do you like doing films?
I do like doing films. I like working, and I like being busy, more importantly. These specifically were fantastic stories, and that's kind of my goal in anything, is to work on good stories.
And what are your plans, both of you, after this limited run ends on July 31st? You're going to take vacations?
I have to go back to work. I'm doing the season 8 of House, so I'm actually if we run till the end of July, which would be great, I then have to head right back to L.A. and start shooting again.
Oh, you'll run till the end of July, don't you think?
You never know. You never know. It's always – Broadway's – summer's a tricky time in Broadway because – and also right now the States – if you notice in Times Square these days, it's quite European. The American – when the dollar gets weak, very few – much less Americans travel. So New York becomes much more dependent on foreign money, and it's harder to get those people to come see old Garson Kanin plays.
I hope we do run. It would be wonderful.
Nina Arianda and Robert Sean Leonard are two of the stars in Born Yesterday at the Court Theater through July 31st. For ticket information, visit our show page at WNYC.org. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.